The sport of korfball enjoys a strong following in Holland, Belgium, and several other European countries. And 2 weeks ago, a small, dedicated group of U.S. players gathered in Clinton, New York for a rare opportunity to practice and play their sport. Only a Game's Doug Tribou reports.
Korfball is spelled K-O-R-F-B-A-L-L. Korf means basket in Dutch. But as enthusiasts will tell you, the sport is very different from American basketball.
So it's really Dutch basketball. So I think of basketball, but with some European or soccer-type rules.
And you move the ball by passing, so it's a lot of cooperation.
Think of it as a cross between Ultimate Frisbee and basketball.
Guys can't guard girls, and girls can't guard guys.
So you're trying to get this ball into this hoop, the korf, taller than a basketball hoop, no backboard. So a little added challenge to it.
You know, why there's no backboard, who knows? That's just what they had.
I mean, you're not running into each other. You don't have to worry about getting hit.
But when you got the ball, you can't move. You can pivot.
It's 1 point per basket, regardless of where it's shot from.
Today, Hamilton College's korfball organization, HamilKorf, is hosting its second annual tournament. Junior Louis Bogaqual is the founder. Originally from Pound Ridge, New York, Bogaqual spent his first year of college in St. Andrews, Scotland, and tried korfball on a whim.
I'd never heard of it, and my goal on my year abroad was just do everything I can, get into something cultural I'd never heard of. This really fit the bill. So I joined, and it was a great group of people, and it was just this interesting sport that anyone can play.
When Bogaqual decided to transfer to Hamilton for his sophomore year, he wasn't ready to give up his new hobby.
And I thought, you know, but there's one thing I don't want to leave behind, and that'd be korfball. So I said, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get this going in the U.S. or get it going in Hamilton, at the very least give it a shot.
Bogaqual held an information session, and before long, HamilKorf was holding two practices a week. Today, the korfball pitch is set up on a well-worn basketball court in an old campus gym. The korfball hoops are 3.5 meters, or about 11.5 feet, high. Older hoops feature a wicker cylinder, like a large laundry basket with the bottom cut out. The cylinders on modern hoops are bright yellow plastic. Students are warming up, shooting traditional black and white korfballs, which look exactly like soccer balls, and newer versions, which are gold and blue.
We're going to look for the first group to score 10 goals.
The morning opens with an instructional session led by Steve Barker. Today, Barker lives in Los Angeles, but he learned the game in the 1970s as a teenager growing up in England. He went on to play for Great Britain's national team and is coached at just about every level. He demonstrates the way to follow through on a korfball shot, which is a sort of two-handed set shot.
Make sure that you express in the shot fully. Really extend the fingers into the shot. You're taking all that power from the body and expressing it in the hands.
There are 16 players on the korfball court at a time, 4 men and 4 women per team. Barker says the game's structure keeps everyone involved and prevents players from becoming offensive or defensive specialists.
The court is split into 2 halves. So 4 of the team, 2 men and 2 women, 4 at the other end. 1 will be defense, 1 will be attack. Now after 2 goals, they swap over.
Carl Jurger traveled to New York from North Carolina, where he's a math professor at Davidson College. Jurger learned the game in England while studying at Cambridge. He says because there's no dribbling and players cannot shoot when they're closely guarded, korfball hasn't followed basketball's evolutionary path.
Height is less of an advantage in korfball, and it's more about speed and quickness and strategy. And the fact that it's really hard for one single person to take over a game. I mean, you can't just give the ball to the LeBron of korfball or the Kobe of korfball because they can only take 2 steps with the ball. It's not like they can juke through their defenders, you know, turn around twice and then dunk it. Right? It just doesn't work in korfball.
Carla Walters is a retired kinesiology professor. She taught a korfball course that sparked a brief craze a few years ago at Hope College in Holland, Michigan. She says it caught on quickly with her students.
I have found that they love it being a co-ed game. They can play with their boyfriend or their girlfriend and play at the same time. You don't have to cheer from the sidelines. You can play together. And it's something that they really probably haven't done since elementary school is play a sport together.
Hamilton student James Kamihachi says he was never an athlete in high school, but he quickly got comfortable playing korfball.
I liked a lot of the people in korfball, made a lot of good friends here, but for me it was a game that was easy to pick up. It's a very passing, heavily oriented game, so everyone gets to play. So it was a sport that I actually could participate in, and I actually got to a point where I was reasonably good and felt confident. It was really the first team sport I've ever played.
Kamihachi's words would probably make korfball creator Nico Brookhausen smile. Broekhuizen was a school teacher in Amsterdam in the early 1900s. After seeing an exhibition of a new sport called basketball in Sweden, Broekhuizen began developing a game all of his students, male and female, could play simultaneously. He unveiled korfball in Holland in 1903. Today, the International Korfball Federation has member organizations in more than 50 countries. Here in the U.S., the game's been played for decades. Rockport, Maine resident Rebecca Shields first played in the late 1970s at Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
In the 70s and 80s, there was some momentum. We were trying to drum up support, and we were getting clubs, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Eugene, Oregon, and Houston, Texas, and the University of New Mexico. So there were some clubs in different parts of the United States. As those people started having families and people got busy, then that momentum was starting to kind of crunch.
That's why a small korfball event in a tiny upstate New York village has attracted players from all over the country. Korfballers have a tough time getting a game. U.S. Korfball Federation President David Warren, who makes korfball hoops and provided Hamelkorf with its first set of equipment, came all the way from West Virginia.
I drove up here, it was about 8 hours, and I came to play because it's the only game in town, I guess, because we don't have too many events going on, so if I wanted to play, this is where I had to come to play.
Warren also learned the game in the 70s at Oral Roberts University and has played for the U.S. at multiple world championships. He says it's frustrating to see the sport struggle here, having seen how it's flourished overseas.
If you go to a Dutch korfball club, you'll have korfball players that could be 5 years old or 65 years old. Some clubs might have 10 teams, but every level is represented from the highest level to just recreation, you know, kind of like softball is here. You know, you have church teams and you have really recreation teams and you have real competitive teams, and that's the way it is over in Holland.
Ball's up here.
After the training session ends, scrimmaging begins. A true korfball court would be 40 meters by 20 meters, roughly a third larger than a basketball court. Play carries on in front and in back of the hoops, and without a backboard in the way, shots and misses can come from any and all angles around the freestanding post. Games last 60 minutes, and with baskets worth just 1 point apiece, they're not high-scoring affairs. Elite teams might score between 20 and 30 points in a game. Here at Hamilton, with a mix of rusty veterans and developing newcomers, most of the final scores end in the single digits. Can the new burst of enthusiasm at Hamilton launch a korfball comeback? Tournament organizer and USKF board member Louis Bogaqual is trying to get other colleges interested in korfball. He's not sure if it will spread, but he knows the kind of people the sport needs.
These people are definitely open-minded because they heard about this and they're at least willing to show up and give it a go. They're people who want some exercise, want to have some fun, but they don't want to, you know, be on a team for 6 days a week, giving a couple hours a day. They want to try something new. There's that niche. And also, I guess you might say, there's something kind of crazy zany about them.
If that sounds like you, korfball may be your sport. Nearly all of the players here say making new friends is one of the best parts of the game. It's a small, close-knit group, but they'd love to add a few more members. For Only a Game, I'm Doug Tribou.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Tribou. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Mark Filippino. And our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To see Doug Tribou's photos of the korfball tournament at Hamilton College, subscribe to the Only a Game podcast, listen to archived shows and stories, or learn more about our weekly music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from U.S. Korfball Federation board member Carl Jurger, who points out just one of korfball's many attractions.
Normally it's just the guys or just the girls, but now you've got men and women in high-pressure situations, which sometimes can make for very interesting situations.
As Charlie Pierce would say, sports. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at mecfound.org. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.